Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
Welcome to From Pain to Purpose Podcast with your host, Dr. Ava Eagle Brown, on Bashani Radio in New York City. Always talking about everything? Recycle your pain to live your best life. Listen on the Bashani app and syndicated worldwide on every platform where podcasts are played. Sponsored by themangogirl.com with skincare products that will have you glow from head to toe. Go to themangogirl.com.
This is Dr. Ava Eagle Brown with Pain to Purpose Podcast, live on Bashani Radio, coming to you all the way from New York City, and you know we're always talking about everything. The last episode, I was so emotional. I was so emotional. It's really hard. I mean, this whole series is going to be really hard. I'm telling you my life. I'm taking you through some of the things I've been through. Not because I just want to drag you through my life, but I'm really hoping that it may be able to help you, your bestie, your sister friend, or somebody you know. You know, in every family, there is somebody who's impacted by something that I said. I don't remember who said it, but your story is in my story. All of our stories overlap. And whilst you may not have the very exact thing that I've been through, there is always something in my story that you can relate to. Today, I want to talk about something that I'm smiling a bit because it's funny and it's not. I want to talk to you about fleeing my home country, Jamaica, and the vicissitude of London. You know, a lot of people hear about Jamaicans or people who migrate, or some people call it immigrate to other countries, the US, you know, Europe, Canada, North America, and they think, oh my God, they were struggling. Life was hard for them in their country. And very often when I see how people treat me in Europe, and I just sometimes smile to myself because a lot of them think that, you know, I was some struggling poor girl from Jamaica who had life so hard that I had to move to Europe. And that's furthest from the case. And that is a case for many people, millions of people across the world who have left their country for one reason or another and have to seek or have sought refuge in another country. Sometimes it's not because they were poor. They're not always, financial refugee or, you know, running because they're suffering or they're hungry. Not at all. It wasn't the case for me. We didn't leave Jamaica because we were poor. We didn't leave Jamaica because life was financially hard. Far from the truth. We actually had 4 cars in our house. We drove a particular car to work and one for the weekends. We had built our own house. By the time we were about 24, 26, we were okay. I was working a good job. My ex was working a good job. We had good money. We did not come because we were suffering. I came because, unfortunately, life happened to me. And I remember when I had to pack up our house to come, I remember, you know, although I'd just come to London to visit not so long ago to my auntie's house, she had a nice house. I was naive to think that all the houses in England were like that because I was so accustomed to going to North America. I went to Florida, New York, and for the most part, American houses were big. So in my head, I'm coming to England, life had to be better. Come on, it had to be better. Well, my God, it was such a shock. I mean, I remember leaving my nice, nice car, my Honda Accord in Jamaica. It was packed up there. It didn't get sold until months or probably a year after. I can't remember now. And I came to London. I remember when I landed at the airport, that somebody was meant to come and collect me. Nobody came. The agency didn't show up for me. I was coming to become a teacher, something I hadn't done for a while. And part of me was excited because for the most part, I was going to be safe. So the worry about the police coming and flashing the light at me, all of that dissipated. I was not going to at least feel safe. And in that moment, that's what I needed. Sometimes in our lives, there are some things that we need in that immediate situation than we need other things. And in that immediacy, all I needed was safety. So I didn't care about much more, or so I thought. And I remember coming to London, and I was at the airport, and for hours, nobody came to get me. I rang the agency and they forgot to pick me up, and it was crazy. And I remember going in, they eventually said I was to take a cab, and I didn't even understand how money worked here. So, you know, the pound is stronger than the dollar, the Jamaican dollar, not the US dollar now. And I didn't come with a lot of pounds, because when you exchange, it was a lot of money in Jamaica. So for me, it was a lot of money. That's what I thought. And I left my daughter behind, and that was really hard. I left her behind for a month. And I went in the cab, and they were sending me to go to a hostel. I didn't know what a hostel was. Okay. Now, remember, I left my house in Jamaica, ensuite bathroom, living help, nice car. I'm going to a hostel. Now, I didn't know how a black cab worked. I mean, I was driving all my life in Jamaica. I drove myself around. I didn't need to take a cab much. And so I got in the cab, and the cab took me to the hostel all the way across town. And I saw this meter moving, and I wasn't unintelligent. It wasn't part of my culture. So I didn't understand it. And by the time I got to the hostel, well, all of my money was almost finished. Anyway, I got into this hostel. And my God, did anybody tell me I was going back to live on the dormitory? I went into this building, and it was revolting. Just thinking about it made me feel sick. There were several of us sharing a room. The food was like probably what they served back in the days, you know, in slavery time, when they were just dashing stuff to people. And I just felt sick. Girls were coming in and out all kinds of hours of the night. I was a married woman who just left my own house. And I remember laying there, and I missed Jamaica. I cried. I didn't eat. And I couldn't be more happy for when it was my time to leave. And so eventually I was meant to turn up to find somewhere to live. The agency did not fulfill their promise. I'm in a foreign country. I can't turn back. I want to go back home. My child is home. My husband's home. Because by this time, my ex-husband and I had gone back together. And he was going to come and join us. And I want to go back home. I just don't want to be here. It was cold. I was alone. I was lonely. I felt lost. I felt abandoned again. I felt abandoned again. And I remember going in a cab, a Rasta man, I never forget him, from one of the islands, got into his car again, not remembering, thinking it's a taxi. So, okay, it's not a black cab, but it's a taxi, okay. And I got into the cab, and again, money was expleted. And I ended up living, because I didn't understand that living in London was so expensive. So the plan that the agency had was you would come, you'd find somewhere to live. They expect you to have money from your country, and you would get paid, and you'll sort yourself out because you're coming to a job. Well, I didn't really understand that properly. I didn't know that rent was so expensive. I didn't do my research. I didn't have enough time to do my research. I was fleeing for my sanity, and I was fleeing to stay alive. So in those moments, I don't think about anything else. Plus, I didn't have enough time because I had to be packing up my house in Jamaica, trying to get it rented, trying to sell my furniture. It was crazy. It was too crazy because back home at the time, people didn't really rent houses furnished or so. It was more empty and you bring your own furniture. So we needed to clear our house out. And I remember finding a B&B, bed and breakfast. At the time, I can't remember, but it was a lot of money per night. It was a lot. To me, it was a lot of money. And when I was done paying for the bread and breakfast, I tried to stay near enough where I could go to the school on the bus. And by the time I'd finished paying rent and bus fare every day, there was no money left. And I remember I used to have, I never forget this, I would buy a 2-liter cream soda and a 1 bag of white sliced bread. That was my breakfast, my lunch, and my dinner for a while. In London. A Jamaican girl coming from a what is considered third world country. I'm in London. I came to a job, gave up my good house, my helper to cook my meals. I'm not gonna cook for myself, but this time I'm cooking cream soda, sliced bread. Wow. And I had to ask myself the question, like, are you for real, for real, for real, Ava? Like, you really left Jamaica to this? And I was in a potpourri of emotions. I was confused. I uprooted my whole family for this. And I had to keep reminding myself, then I wasn't so awakened and enlightened and empowered. So I just had to keep reminding myself that I was safer in London. So whatever was happening, you were safe. And I remember my friend who was here, she left Jamaica and she was here. She helped me to get a room. And I remember going to, we're renting house. I thought, oh, I'm gonna rent an apartment. I thought, great, I'm gonna rent a house. When we turned up, this was the shocking thing. Like having a bathroom with a shower, a power shower was a luxury. It cost more. Having a garden was a luxury. It costs more because London doesn't really have the let me just say the urban areas of London. London's an old city, so it doesn't have all that space to kind of build, you know, big roads and stuff like that, like the US, for example, or Canada. So the houses are smaller, right? And they're cut. They a London house that's probably a 3-bedroom will cost more than some Americans' 5 or 6-bedroom house because the houses are expensive. But it's really tiny. So it's like a matchbox. And I remember going to look at this apartment, and the lady said, you know, to have a garden, it costs more. To have a power shower, it costs more. I was like, what the hell? Are you for real? I just left my ensuite bathroom back home. Even my helper had her own. And that was hard to get around. That vicissitude was crazy. Like, how do I move? And I had to be asking myself the question, how did I move from being this girl who was having a really nice job, doing very well for myself, not washing, not cooking, not cleaning, not doing any of those things to come here to be unable to afford a 1-bedroom flat? It was, I couldn't reconcile that in my head. Eventually, I had to take this house, and it was the weirdest thing. We rented a room in a house. Well, I rented a room in a house because my sister was joining me soon and my daughter. And you lived in the front room, which is like the reception room where you put your sofa. So they rented out that room to us. It was a big room. And we had to cross the landing to go over to the kitchen and the bathroom. It was crazy. We're renting a room in a house. So it's a shared house. It was like I was living on dormitory again. I was in dormitory. I was back in college. I was back in university, and it was just hard. Like even thinking about it has not been a difficult thing to grapple in my head. And I bawled. I didn't cry, I bawled. I just went into a depression. Like whatever it is that was happening back in Jamaica where I came here, it wasn't worth it. I really had that conversation for a long time. And I remember being in there, and the carpet was dirty, but you can't do much about it because it's not yours. And it was awful. It was just awful. And then it was winter, my first winter, and it was cold. And my fingers, I wasn't well prepared. I wasn't dressed properly for winter. I didn't understand how to dress for winter. So before I knew it, the winter came, and I had not yet gotten used to the big coats, and my fingers were not in gloves, and they were burning like somebody had cut my fingers and put that sweet Jamaican Scotch bonnet pepper in them. Man, I had a rude awakening. And before you knew it, my daughter was gonna come and my sister. And I felt embarrassed to bring them there. I felt like, what did I do? Like, I left Jamaica for this? Like, are you crazy? And even now, today, I still have that thought. I still believe that the quality of life I had in Jamaica probably is a mindset thing, but it's not. I've never been able to have that in the UK. I've never been able to have it. There was just, and you see, sometimes you don't even know what you have until you lose it, because I probably underestimated the quality of life I built, because remember, I was born poor. But the quality of life I'd built in Jamaica, I've never been able to get that back in Europe. It's been difficult. It's been, you know, your house is expensive, your car is expensive to maintain, you pay all kind of taxes. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing because it's probably why these economies do so well. But when you don't have, when you have, when you're paying £1,200 a month for a nursery, that's crazy. I mean, London became this place that it took me about 6 good years to feel okay. To feel okay. And even today, I can't feel happy about it necessarily. I'm not sad, but when you can't, when your family's not with you, it just doesn't feel okay. And so I lived there and I lived in those kind of situations. You know, I saw women rolling themselves out of bars and vomiting, and it was just a very big culture shock. So I'm going to tell you more about my London experience after this break. A lot of you listening might be thinking in the break, or probably even now, like, why would you leave your country for that? Or some of you might be thinking, you know what? I can relate to that. Because there are lots of people who've migrated and, you know, your life is just not the same. I've come to the UK and I remember life got so hard. And I'm just summarizing my London vicissitude. I remember living here and literally going to get a job to clean toilets because I couldn't function, because I couldn't pay the bills, because it was that tough. And I remember the day I went, and the lady actually, I didn't dress properly for it. I've been living in this country almost 20 years, and I still do not know how to dress. I'm a sun baby. I was born in the sun. I crave the sun. I gravitate towards the sun. I am everything sun. I still don't know how to dress properly. I'm too hot. I go out on underdress for winter. I don't know how to do it. And I remember going, we had I'd lost everything, just about. My sister had died and I'd gone to Jamaica to bury her. And you have to read more of my book. And I came back to London and I had no job. And there were bills to be paid. And I remember going for, applying for this job as to go and clean toilets. And I remember turning up and I didn't have on the proper footgear. And they turned me back. They said I couldn't clean the toilets because can you imagine cleaning toilets all day? I was like, whoa. Ooh. Every time I think about that, like, clean toilets all day, you know. And although I needed the money, I was glad. I was actually glad I was sent back, genuinely, because I couldn't do it. I worked in the bank, did my master's, worked in the bank, and I was earning the same amount of money as girls who had just regular high school education. And I was thinking, what's this? And I think what got me was one day I had a, my daughter came, my sister came a month or so after, and I had a breakdown. And I remember picking up my phone. I was angry. And I called the gunman. So, how did I get his number? I can hear you asking me. I worked for a telecoms company in Jamaica. And when they borrowed my phone, remember I talked about how they borrowed my phone to call the others to join them because they had pay as you go? So, when they rang, because we were then doing Global System Mobile, GSM technology, we were able to identify certain things. So, I got their details. I know his name even today. And I remember calling him because I was angry at him. Now, how dare you come and disrupt my life? And I rang him and I asked him, why did you do it? Who sent you? I needed closure. I didn't get it. And I was angry because my daughter came, my sister came. They were shocked. Like, I could see them like, what did we come to? Like, they probably thought I was mad. Of course, they understood why I came, but in their head, like, what we're doing here? Like, what are we doing? And we moved from the one room to another, to a 2-bedroom apartment. Like, that was crazy. Like, 2 bedrooms. It was like one Jamaican bedroom and a kitchen, barely, you couldn't even turn around in it. And it was, everything was so small. We were crammed. We were not used to these small spaces. So I didn't learn how to declutter because how do you throw away the things you needed? And we lived on top of each other almost. There was no privacy. There was one bathroom. Can somebody explain to me why do England houses mainly have one bathroom, one toilet, one shower? So if you want to wee, you have to wait until the other person. It's crazy. We struggled, man. We really, really struggled. We struggled. And there are moments when I thought of packing up and going back home. A lot of times. Took me a very long time. Worked in the bank, and I was in the bank, like I was saying earlier, and just couldn't make ends meet. I was struggling. I'm a single mother. My husband came at the time. It didn't work out. And I was single. I was on my own, and I was really struggling. The rent was expensive. The mortgage, we got a house. I bought myself a house. The mortgage was expensive. I'm trying to make ends meet, and it's just not happening. And I was in the bank, and I remember, in an effort to help pay my bills, I had to get a housemate. I remember I'm a big woman who was married, living in my own house, ensuite bathroom, and having my own maid. And now I'm in a foreign country that was better than my country, and I'm having to rent my room to somebody else in the house so that I can stay afloat. And even then, I was struggling. Did you get that? I don't know if you know somebody like that, or that could be you. You see, sometimes foreign is not the best. So I remember I was in the bank, and my daughter used to stay with the housemate while I rushed off to work, and the housemate would look after her. And one day, the housemate said she couldn't do it anymore, so I needed to get a babysitter. So my daughter will be picked up from school by her babysitter, taken to the babysitter's house. And I remember one day I came home from the bank, rushed on the train, jumped in my car, got to the babysitter's house. No, called the babysitter, said I'm on my way. And she said, my daughter is not there. What do you mean by she's not there? Like, remember, guys, I'm overprotective because of sexual abuse was part of my history. What do you mean not there? She's at your house. How could she be at my house? And the long and short of it is the babysitter left my daughter with my flatmate, who she'd never met, doesn't know anything about. And that was like the end of it. I left the bank. I was like, I can't put my child at risk while I'm trying to work. The journey for me in London has been rough. I can't begin to tell you guys. I'm writing a second book called The Woman of Steel and Stone. And there are things that I'm going to reveal in that book that I don't think anybody will believe. I think people will think I'm just making these things up. There were times when I questioned myself, like, why me? Does bad luck follow me? Like, you know, what is it about me? But London has been bittersweet. I think more bitter than sweet, if I'm really honest. I feel safer for the most part. But it's been tough. It's been tougher than ever living in Jamaica, because back home you have family support. And for those who have never lived outside of your country, you don't have an opinion. I'm tired of people who don't have any notion, any idea, to look at me with judgment or in judgment. You don't know what it's like. You've never traveled. You've never left your country. You've never tried to live somewhere else. You've never experienced racism. You've never been in a country where, because you are black or because you're Jamaican, you suddenly have all of these stereotypes hung around your neck. You don't know what that feels like. That's how London has been for me. And in that process, I got divorced. I got divorced. I met somebody else, got married. And it has been a disaster for the most part. But all in all, London has also been good. I have grown here as a person. I went back to university, got qualified with my master's and other qualifications. I have had a chance to get to know me. I've had to be extra independent. I've had to know how to survive. I've aged. Can you relate to being in a space where you don't have family and support, no husband, just you and your kids, and life's vicissitude come at you, and you have to just go on your knees and look to the Creator? That's me every day. Because if it's not one thing, it's another. And on top of it, you experience racism, discrimination, sexism, and so many other things. And there are days when I just want to pack up my bag and run, even today. And I probably romanticize about Jamaica in a way that might not even be reality when I go there. Like, what are you romanticizing about? But I romanticize about seeing my family. I romanticize about if all my family could be here, my mom, my sisters, my stepfather, my nieces and nephews, I'd love England. I'd be okay. It would be the perfect place to be because I just crave that. And it doesn't mean that my family and I have a perfect relationship. Absolutely not. But I miss them and I love them. And so the next time you see an immigrant in your country, be nice to them. Be kind to them. I have taught in London. I have worked in the retail management. I have contributed to the society. So much that I've added to it, and there's so much I've learned. They think that you fled your country, you're taking away their monies, their homes, their jobs. Sometimes there are jobs in London that people who did them were only immigrants. Cleaning the toilets, the offices, you know, care work, care homes. I want to say to you, be kind to not just immigrants, be kind to one another. Because all of us need each other. And if I knew that London would be so hard, I guarantee you I would never have come. I don't care what was happening in Jamaica. I would have stayed. I'd have found a way. I'd probably be dead or alive. I don't know. Probably, I hope that alive. But I would never have done it. The one thing about London that I would have wanted to have done was to have had my son. So, but you can't have it, right? You can't have it both ways. So I would have wanted to have my son. So what am I trying to say in all of this preamble is that London has been a very hard road, a hard journey. It's been the midpoint of my hard journeys. And it's one that stays with me. Sometimes I keep saying, if I were in Jamaica, I wouldn't be single. Like, how could I be single? It's not possible. But I'm in the UK, 60 million people, and I'm single, right? How does that even happen? Sometimes I question that. Like, how does that happen? How can you? And that's the thing about being in these big cities and these countries, is that you can be lonely. And I don't mean intimately lonely. You can be, I lived in London for years and didn't know who my neighbors were. Not because I don't want to. But that's just how the society is. I miss the Caribbean spirit. I miss the sense of community. I miss people saying hello to you. I miss knowing who your neighbors are. I miss people being kind to each other. I miss people, like in Jamaica, somebody goes to their farm, they bring back a piece of yam, they're giving you some. Somebody's giving you, we share, we care. We might quarrel and fight, but we share, we care. We smile, we are loving. I miss Jamaica. I miss home. I miss family. What do you miss? I'm gonna challenge you to do two things. To first of all, get the journal and make sure you're in there, but also examine yourself. Examine, if you're not an immigrant, examine how you treat immigrants in your country. How you treat the person. I remember when I was teaching, I was the only teacher who knew the name of my classroom cleaner. Guy from Nigeria, black. Other teachers didn't care. They didn't bother. They didn't want to know. But I could relate to him and I could relate to his story. And for a whole year, he cleaned our classrooms, dusted our desk, and nobody cared to know his name. He turned out to have been a doctor in his country. He was just here illegally, no passport. How do you treat the people who you've come into contact with who were not from your country? Did you judge them? Did you treat them kindly? Were you nice to them? Also, if you're an immigrant and you're abroad and you're listening to this, or you know somebody who's an immigrant and you want to share this with them, you're not alone. I want to say to you that the pain of migration has a purpose at the end of it. And though sometimes, you know, I can't see it immediately, I know that I've impacted many lives, and I probably would not have been able to do that in Jamaica the way, because my path would have been different. So probably this is part of my journey, part of my purpose walk. And so, and sometimes I come through that kind of reconciliation and I'm okay, but I'm not always okay. And I'm going to be honest with you. It's cold and it's miserable, and we're in quarantine and I'm just alone with my son, and that's hard. So be kind to immigrants, and immigrants, be kind to yourself. Try to be content where you are. And I know that I say that and it sometimes sounds like I'm being hypocritical. No, there are days when I'm content with it, but there are other days when it's really hard. The last thing I want to say to you is show human love. It doesn't matter where the person's from. Try to be adaptable as well, because I've had to be adaptable. And whatever decisions you make, learn to live with them. Sometimes they're hard. And I'm on this journey for nearly 20 years, trying to do just that. There are good days and there are bad days. I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you about which part of this podcast so far has impacted you. How has it impacted you? What's going on with you? You know, how is it making you feel? Are you learning anything from it? I want to hear about your healing and your journey so far, because it's really fundamental that I understand that this is helping you. So until next time, I want to thank you all for listening, sharing with others, invite others to come and listen. And remember, this is Pain to Purpose on Bashani Radio Network, a show that's focused on how people recycle their pain and start living their best life. Until next week, I'm your host, Dr. Ava Eagle Brown. Walk good, as we say in Jamaica. Walk good.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.